Tampa Bay, what's good? Your boy Chris Glage is in the house. We got a big divisional matchup. It's the lounge.
And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
What is good, Tampa Bay? It is
Let's go. A
nice, sunny Sunday, beautiful morning. Got a lot of rain yesterday. It got everything wet, but you know what? We're in a good mood, baby. It's a big weekend. Chris, first of all, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Huge, huge weekend and a huge week ahead, obviously, with the baseball playoffs getting ready to start, and Troptober will be coming. It's a great time, man. I keep saying it over and over, but this is the best time of the year by far. How are you doing?
Buddy, I was just about to say, because as all of us that are like diehard sports fans,
for sure,
this is the most craziest time of the year. Let me just run this down for you, Chris. Okay. The Rays last night won a seesaw game against Toronto. We'll get to them in a little second. The Rowdies, my guys, you'll see right there, boom, my green and gold, defeated Loudoun United to clinch a home playoff game. And they're set up for a huge matchup next week against Pittsburgh they're fighting for the top of the Eastern Conference, the entire East. The Lightning are starting their season. They won their preseason game last night. USF beat Navy 40-33. They're undefeated in their conference play. So we've got some seasons are ending and some seasons are starting. I mean, for instance, we'll get right into this. I guess you mentioned the Rays. We learn who we get to play in the wild card today. Today is the last day of Major League Baseball season. It's probably going to be Toronto, but it could be Houston. The RBLR Rays guys yesterday had a really, really good playoff preview talking about four different potential playoff people that we could play. But what a weekend so far. Did you see any of that? Did you see the Lightning? Did you see the Rays? Did you watch any?
Yeah, man. I mean, the Lightning have looked good in preseason so far. Obviously, a great start to the preseason. Obviously, the Vassie news is a huge bummer. So they got to stay afloat here and get some of these younger guys some time on the ice. With Vassie being out, I think it's going to be we're going to have to score some goals. So Lightning look good. And obviously the Rays, you know, I'm hoping for Toronto myself. I think that's the best matchup. You know, it's a divisional foe. You know, Toronto plays as tough, but the Rays I think the Rays are saving it this year for the playoffs. I think the bats are going to show up this year. I think this has got to be the year where the bats show up no matter who we play. But I would probably prefer to play Toronto. I really don't want to play Houston. Houston's always going to ALCS. They're a great road team as well. So I think I'd rather prefer to play Toronto.
Agreed. And I think the Rays pretty much thought that they were going to play them because they made sure to avoid to play their, like, the Glasnow didn't have to pitch this series against Toronto. I mean, once they wrapped up their spot and they knew where they were going to be, they were really good with their pitching matchup management, so that, you know, a little less familiarity. Plus, I mean, the playoffs are a crapshoot. Once you just got to get in, you got to get in the tournament, and then from that point, hopefully, you play the best 3 weeks of baseball of your life.
Yep.
And hopefully, there's a ring at the end of it. But it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be good, but I mean, Toronto, I think, is our easiest opponent to play. But who? I mean, they're very talented too. Well, from one season, we'll get into all that. I mean, next week, talking about the Rays, we might have we might be into the next round, or the season might be over. What a week it could
be. Hopefully it's the latter, man. Hopefully it's the latter.
But today, Chris, today, the Bucks hope to put a cap on this winning weekend. And before we get into Bucks versus Saints, a huge divisional matchup, I want you to, if you're listening and watching this live on YouTube, hit that little like button, hit that little subscribe button, join the hundreds of people that are with us, riding with us every week as we put out content for your Lightning, your Rays, your Rowdies, your Bucks, all the stuff. We have shows dedicated to all the things you love right here at RBLR. So we're also on social media. We're at RBLR Sports everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, you name it, we're there. Just give us that little like and join the thousands of people that follow us on social media. So it's pretty good. But Chris, let's put our helmets on. Let's get ready for this huge, huge divisional matchup. Let's run through the facts and figures. Bucks versus Saints.
Well, both 2-1. So obviously this is for first place in the South. You know, real quick, last week the Bucks looked rough. You know, the Eagles are a really good team, but the Bucks got dominated on the in the trenches. Man, the offensive line was bad. We had no run game. Hurts had a bunch of time in the pocket, way too much time. You know, the Eagles are a top three team in the league, right? So obviously that's what we expected. I think the Bucks came back down to earth a little bit last week. Obviously off to a great 2-0 start, but we've beaten 2-0-3 teams, and last week was a big test. And yeah, we hung in there a little bit, but to me, I just don't think the Bucks played good football last week. Lots of mistakes. Evans with drops, Baker with his first pick. It was just a rough game last week overall, and it sucks that it was on primetime. I'm not a big fan of primetime games for the Bucks. I think we're a better 1 o'clock team myself. But yeah, it was a rough game last week, and I hope, you know, and obviously that safety, you know, that third and one run, it was just not a good play call, man. You haven't ran the ball well all game. We run it right up the middle. So I hope to see a different team this week. Obviously this is a divisional game, and at the end of the season, the end goal right here is just to win the division. That's all the Bucks got to do, right, to get in, is to win this division. And it's still a toss up. You know, Atlanta's struggling right now. Carolina doesn't look so good. I think it comes down to us and the Saints. So this is a really, really big game. It's in New Orleans. They did say Carr is going to play today. Winston is not going to be starting. Carr is in. Wow. So that Kamara is back from suspension as well. So expect a fresh Kamara. The Saints are battling some injuries on the offensive line. So hopefully the Bucks can get some pressure here. It's going to be really on Tryon and Shaq. We'll get into more of that here. But this is obviously a really big matchup.
Yeah. First, let's talk about the offense here. How do you think the Bucks win this game? Like, what's your roadmap? What's your headlines? If we win this game, how did we do it?
I gotta say, we gotta run the ball, man. I like now is that he's not giving up on the run, which is a good sign. But this offensive line has got to run block better. And if we can't run through the tackles, we gotta get some toss sweeps in there, some counter, something, get the ball outside. Because to me, I think White's got the talent. He just doesn't look that good this year. And I don't know if it's because of the O-line. I don't know if it's because of the play calls.
Yeah.
Because he looked good last year, but running behind Lenny. And I don't know if it was just because it was that speed effect, you know, him being in there and Lenny being in there. Lenny was more the in-between tackles guy. And I think White still has it in him. I just think the play calling needs to get better as far as the running goes. And that's been part of this offense so far this year, is trial and error, right? We're only in week four now. So it's like, okay, new OC, like I said, new quarterback. It's time to get things, you know, we got a bye week coming up here. So we got to be able to run the ball today. I think to win this game, you know, it's going to be important to run the ball and run it well. Last week we tried and it wasn't working and the defense was gassed. And when you're going 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, your defense is going to wear down. It just is. It's a physical game. Like I think if we run the ball today, get White going, get some toss sweeps outside, have some, you know, maybe – then that sets up the play action for Baker, and that's where Baker can thrive with play action rollouts, you know, get him moving and get him out of the pocket. So I think running the ball today is going to be a big, big key to this game.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off that with the run, is that it's a little bit of everything, man. Like, one, the offensive line has been not very good.
Besides Tristan Wirfs, really.
Besides Wirfs, right? Which is who switched a position, by the way, right?
Yep.
Injuries hurt this unit, and they just haven't been able to put it together yet. Play calling has been the other problem. And then on the RBLR Bucks show, there was a discussion about the running game, and Zach Blaine, you know, he kind of put more onus on Rashad White to say, you know, it is everything. One, the play calling is what it is. Two, though, the offensive line has to execute better. But if Rashad White, he's a very confident man, if Rashad White is going to be a running back one in this league, you got to make someone miss, man. You got to make, like, I mean, I know it's rough if there's already 2-3 guys on you, but if there's a little bit more escapability from Rashad White and there's just a little bit of an improvement in the offensive line and a better scheming to kind of mitigate our weaknesses and play to those strengths, like you're saying, the little sweeps, use our speed a little bit more, right? all of those little incremental things could be the difference, especially in a game like today, because I actually think we can run on this unit. So all I've heard this week is, oh, Saints have a top 10 run defense. And I'm like, yeah, but they're number 10. They're number 10 in the top right. 10. And they've allowed almost 99.7, almost 100 yards per game. They're not as good as Philadelphia. And we just played them. And I mean, obviously we got shut down, but it's like when you play that level, I think they should be able to elevate their run game against the Saints today, because the Saints, well, it might actually be not just Rashad White though. I think they gave up multiple 10 yard plus runs. That's why I think Rashad White could break something past that first level, and then boom, now you're gone. But also Baker Mayfield being mobile as he is. Now, I don't think he needs to run around like Justin Fields, but he could. It's possible. I mean, this Philadelphia defense, they gave up. I mean, they had a 14-point lead or 17-point lead in the fourth quarter last game, you know, before they lost Derek Carr.
Right.
But they gave up 18 points in the fourth quarter, and part of that was a mobile quarterback being able to do some damage. So the run game, however it comes, it has to. I think you're completely right with that. Well, and you talked about setting up play action and things like that. What are your thoughts on Baker Mayfield? If we win this game, what did you need to see out of Baker Mayfield?
I think we do need to obviously set up that play action. I think we need to get more targets in there for Palmer and Godwin. You know, I know Evans has been the guy this year, but Lattimore always shuts down Evans, not to put a jinx on it, but Lattimore.
We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah. So I think Baker's, they got to be able to run the ball, because so that'll limit Baker's turnovers, right? We saw the interception Baker threw last week, and I feel like he forced that ball. Like, I feel like he felt like he had to throw that. It was middle of the field. It was a bad read, and he finally threw his first pick of the year. So I think Baker's just run the ball, keep the pressure off Baker, and protect him as well. Obviously, the O-line has to do a better job today and give Baker time. And we got to get that run game going for Baker to be successful, I think, because – and Baker, you know what? Baker looks good in hurry up as well. So maybe run some more hurry up in there, because when we went hurry up against the Vikings in that first game of the season, that's when I really saw Baker, you know, get some good plays in there and get some rhythm going. And I think that's key for him. Whatever gets Baker going, you know, do whatever he needs to be done, because he's obviously the quarterback of the team. He's under a lot of scrutiny, right? You know, he's coming into this season on this team, being that guy that's had an up and down NFL season, can't find a home. Like, he's trying to solidify himself this year with the Bucs. So I think the run game is key to a lot today, including Baker having a successful game.
Yeah, you talked about the O-line. I think a big matchup to keep Baker upright is Cam Jordan versus Luke Gedecky. Moving Worfs over to the other side, he was usually the person that was keeping Cam Jordan off the field. And Cam's been talking all that. He's been talking all that trash, man. You know, saying this isn't a rivalry, just because we're in the division, like, they're not a rival. I mean, Bucs fans, I think we hate the Saints more than anyone else in our division. So if that's Luke Gedecky can somehow keep Cam Jordan away from the quarterback, I think it's going to be very, very good for Baker Mayfield, who needs to stay clean, no turnovers, just do what we expect out of him. But you also mentioned Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore. I think it's a huge part of this game is there will be maybe 2 to 3 big plays that come down to Mike Evans versus Lattimore. I think you're definitely right with getting Godwin more involved and getting the rest of the offense involved. But there's going to be a couple one-on-ones with Evans and Lattimore. And if Baker can get that ball into Evans, he has to make the catch. Some of those plays are a little bit of Mayfield's fault last week, but there's a couple that, like, Evans is wide receiver one, right? He wants that money, and it's like, man, sometimes you got to make chicken salad out of chicken shit, you know what I'm saying? And, I mean, that's just the truth. And Mike Evans, Mr. 1000, for a reason. He's got to play the game. He's got to make the catch, and he can't let the emotions get to him this game. We cannot lose Mike Evans because of getting disqualified or punching Marshawn Lattimore or whatever. Cause I know Lattimore is going to try to get under his skin. That's the game he plays. So it's all interconnected, but it's like a lot of little battles that will be going on today that I think will be the margins of victory are right there. So, well, let's flip it. So, on offense, is there one or two things that you are like, I mean, look, this isn't a juggernaut offensive unit. Okay. We're talking about maybe the offensive line holds them up. Maybe we get a run game going. Maybe Baker Mayfield creates something.
Right.
But is there like a big weakness that you're like, guys, if we don't do this, or then we will not win?
I think it's the offensive line itself, just protecting Baker and creating a run game in general, man. Like, you're going to have to, because like you talked about with Evans, like real quick was, you know, Evans had a lot of drops last week, and now he's going into a matchup against a corner that is in his head, right? So where's Evans' mindset at right now, right? He knows, you know, he had a lot of drops on primetime last week, which is unlike him. And now he's going into a matchup against a corner that usually locks him down. So hopefully mentally Evans is there, you know, like you said, don't let it get to you, man. Go in there and just play your game. Do your thing. Don't let Lattimore get in your head, and don't be stupid. So I do think the offensive line is going to be key to this game, because you're going to have to, you're probably going to have to double Cam Jordan to some extent, or chip him maybe. Maybe Otten gets involved somehow, because Otten hasn't really done much this year. You know, he's had a couple drops. I know we've struggled at the tight end position for a couple years with after Gronk left, honestly, and even before that. So I think the offensive line is going to be a really, really big key to this game. Contain Cam Jordan. Don't let him get after Baker, and just run this ball, man. I think those are going to be the keys for this offense today.
Yeah, my big thing is they got to score points, man. I mean, this sounds stupid, but can we score more than 20 points? Because we'll get into the defense in just a second, but this might be a game you need to score 3 to 4 touchdowns to win this game. I think that the matchups are just right for this to break out to be a kind of a crazy little higher scoring game than we expect. I think this has potential to be one of those like, how did both these teams score 35 points? You know, and we're going to need to. I mean, to be honest with you,
right.
it is the run game, because these teams. You look at New Orleans, 1 point difference against Tennessee, 3 point difference against Carolina, 1 point difference against Green Bay. They want to keep it nice and tight and low scoring. I mean, that's just what they're doing. If we can score 28 points, we're going to win this game regardless, because they just don't have the offense to do that. Now let's flip that though, because that goes into the next thing, which is defense, right? Which to me is the strongest part of our team. It's the reason we will win or lose this game, and part of that is keeping them under 20 points. And this defense, I think, when healthy or they have the talent to do that. But now you said the biggest thing, we didn't know if it was going to be Jameis or David Carr. We now know it is going to be Carr. So he's in, but he is hurt. How do you think having Carr instead of Jameis is going to pan out for the defense?
I think with Kamara coming back, I think they're going to take a lot less pressure off Carr, because he can now run the ball better. He can dump it off quicker to Kamara, who's just a running back where you won't just want to get the ball in his hands, right? He's going to make you miss. He's going to catch passes out of the backfield. He's going to get your screens. Yes. So I think they're going to play it safe with Carr here. Obviously, it's a shoulder injury, so you're going to have to be – it could just be one sack, and you never know. He could re-aggravate it middle of the game if it's one big hit and he's down.
We might see Jameis anyway.
It's possible, because how healthy is Carr, we don't know. Obviously, he's good enough to go, but we've seen that before where it's a one hit in the game and a guy's out right away again, and then the backup quarterback's in there, which would be Winston. So I think they're going to get the ball to Kamara a lot. I could see Kamara being fresh. You know, he's been suspended. It's a rivalry game. I think Kamara's going to want to really show out today. So they're going to have to pressure Carr, though. I'm pretty sure the Saints are missing two linemen, if I'm not mistaken. So Shaq Barrett and Tryon got to show up, man. Like, I'm sorry, but Tryon's had one good game this year. And it's last week we just got dominated. We couldn't get any pressure. Hurts had so much time, man. We got to. Got to be able to pressure the quarterback. Tryon and Shaq have to have a good game today. That is huge, man. You win these games in the trenches, man. It's a division game. The Bucs have, like you said, we've struggled on offense. I think our red zone is 28th in the league, I believe, as far as touchdowns go. So it's if we're not going to score, we got to stop them, right? We got to play buff ball, and that's defense and pressuring Carr.
Yeah, of course. Look, the New Orleans offensive line, even with the if there's some guys missing, they've given up 12 sacks this season.
Right.
And our defensive line went from feasting against Chicago to almost nothing versus the Eagles. I mean, we got one sack, but he kind of fell down. It wasn't like they you know. But that's number one, is that, like you said, they have to get pressure on Carr, because injured or not, I mean, even especially being injured, they're going to try to get that ball to Alvin Kamara, but they're going to have to pass. Kamara by himself, getting a screenplay, getting things like that. If we can get to Carr, it will keep them low scoring. It will give us those things. But I think it's a huge opportunity for Zion McCollum. I think this is a huge game for him to get that pick, to break that. I don't think he has a pick yet. I think he definitely will have chances because they're going to rush Carr. I believe they're going to get there, and it's going to be something where he could be a difference maker, because if this defense scores points for the Bucs,
that's what we need,
buddy. Then we don't have to worry about Baker Mayfield. We don't have to worry about a run game. If we can not only stop them, but create more turnovers, which we've seen this year, create turnovers, create chances, and create points, then we're running away with it. Now we're not even talking about a close game. We're talking about how we're going in this bye week feeling real good. You talked about Kamara, and I believe that's the biggest weakness for the defense, is if Kamara gets to cook. If he gets to cook, then that's a problem, because if they can create long plays, scoring quickly, and getting Kamara, number one in fantasy points this week, that would be a very, very, very bad recipe for the Bucs.
Yes.
And the biggest reason I think that's even a possibility is because of so many defensive injuries. And this is my big weakness. We'll get how you feel about this, but Jamel Dean is out. Servacia Dennis still out. Kalijah Kancey still out. Now those are more depth pieces, right? But that just shows you that there's one line of starters and then a big drop off after that. So as we rotate through the game, as we get the backups in, the younger guys in, we're getting a little bit of help, though. Carlton Davis is actually upgraded to questionable for the first time this season, which we would definitely need that. I think they're going to be passing the ball against our defense. Getting Carlton Davis back, very, very, very big thing if we can do that. Vita Vea is questionable. I believe he'll play, though. And Devin White is also questionable. But it's how impactful can those guys be?
Right.
If it's very, very much so, there can be impactful. Okay, then we're cool. But if it's like they can only go half the plays, they can only do half the packages, they can only go so many, plays, so many snaps, what we get out of those snaps is big time. I mean, if Devin White or Vita Vea can't, create the way that they're, when they're fully healthy, it's going to be up to, like you said, David, it's going to be up to these other guys, Zion McCollum, things like that, to create things without that frontline pressure. And we'll see what gets that. But is there anything else you want to talk about the defense or the offense of the Saints before we get to our predictions?
I think just a couple, just a couple quick keys to this game. Obviously, like we talked about, got to be able to run the ball. You got to be able to score in the red zone. No more field goals, right? We got to put up points, right? That's only going to hold off for so long, because that means you're asking the defense to do a lot. Our defense is banged up. Kancey he's played since the first game, a couple plays, and he's been out since. If Vea is out too, that's a big problem, because then we're really, really going to be missing some guys in the D line. So Vea playing is going to be really key here. I think White is still battling that groin injury. I think he's going to be going, from what I saw. Maybe limited snap count on him, and Carlton Davis with turf toe. That's another one. That's a tough injury. He could tweak that easily again in the game. So the defense has got to stay fresh in this game, right? That means we need to be able to run the ball, because we saw what happened last week. We got gashed. Our run defense got gashed last week, and I haven't seen that happen in a long time, because the Bucs run defense has been tops in the league for years now. That's something the Bucs have been consistent at. So We got to keep that offense on the field, keep the defense fresh in this game. I think those are going to be the keys to this game. I think it's really going to come down to that run game once again. And Canales said he's going to keep running the ball, right? But it's time to get some different play calls in there with the runs, get some toss sweeps, maybe even set up a screen. You know, I know it's not a run, but set up a screen. Just get the ball in your playmaker's hands, play smart, and just go out there and win this game.
All right. Well, with that said, a couple questions for you.
Yep.
You're our betting resident betting guy here. Over under's 40. Do you take the over or the under in this game?
40. I would think it goes under.
Okay.
I think it goes under.
So, like, again, I think that my first thought is to go under. Again, though, I think this has the weird ways that these weaknesses match up for these teams, that it could get out of hand, or, you know, it could be
barn burner.
Each team scoring almost 40 points. There's a timeline where that happens. But with that said, you're picking the under. What is your prediction for the game?
Unfortunately, I have the Saints winning this game 20-17. Vegas has the Saints. I've seen three, and I've seen 3.5 as well.
3.5 is what I got, yeah.
So that means, once again, Vegas thinks it's close. Like you talked about, Saints like to keep this game close, and they're good at that. And my concern here with the Bucs is this offense has not proven to me that we can score points yet. And until that happens, it's a tough game. It's in New Orleans. It's early in the season. I think this is the Bucs that we kind of expected this year. You know, we were all hype off that 2-0 start against 2-0-3 teams. And I think the Eagles are powerhouse and really brought us back down to earth last week. But until this offense can get going, I just, as much as I want the Bucs to win, I think they have a shot today. I'm just not confident enough in it to sit there and say that they're going to win. Yeah. With Vegas having the Saints favored, to me, that thinks it comes down to a field goal. It's a really close game. And until this offense can get going, I just can't put any confidence in them to score yet. I need to see this offense clicking in all cylinders. You know what I mean? We need touchdowns. We need points. You can't keep kicking field goals. It's not going to work in this league. Not in the NFL anymore. You can't do that anymore. So until that starts happening, unfortunately, I see us taking the loss here going into the bye week. And then we have a home game against Detroit. And Detroit looks really, really good. So that's a tough streak ahead. So I think the Bucs need to win this game. But unfortunately, I think it's a close loss here.
Yeah, my gut is telling me that to go again, like it's weird. It's like my normal instance is to go like, look, I'd usually be really down about this game, to be honest with you. But the Eagles are very good. And so I'm grading them on a curve coming off of that game and what I think they can do. I actually have us winning. I have us winning 24-17. And the way I see that happening, because we can establish the run, in my opinion, because the defense can get to the quarterback, I think that we create a lot of three and outs early and we build a pretty good lead. And I think that 10 of those points by the Saints are late in the game when we've already taken advantage of it. Look, because if it's the other way around, the closer that this game is in the fourth quarter, the worse and worse I would feel about it. I think if the way I think it will happen pans out, I think we jump on them early, we take advantage, we score points, and then we kind of hold on and bend but don't break, knowing that we've got a bye week next week. There's a little bit of you can literally fire the cannons, you can throw everything at them, you can pin your ears back, you can do all that stuff, knowing that you're gonna have a week off after this, or a lighter week after this. So,
for sure.
Getting a couple guys back on the defense to strengthen that. Some of those matchups, I believe, are definitely winnable. And that's why I think we're going to not only score, but score more than two touchdowns, which I would love to see. I think we break that 20 point barrier and we get the win. And this is so, like, I feel so weird saying that because, like, everything in my bones normally would be like, yeah, dude, they need to prove this until they do it. I have faith they're going to do this today, though. So I'm like,
I love it, man.
I'm not cocky about it. I think, yeah, man, I think they get it and they clear it and they clear the over. Barely, but they get there.
Close.
Well, We talked a little bit about some predictions and things like that, but let's get to a big thing that I love from you, and that is our bet of the week. Mr. Glazer, bring us through your bets of the week here.
NFL's tough this week, man. There's some tough matchups in here. Obviously, I got the Bengals at -2.5. They're at Tennessee. Tennessee's just and their offense really struggles to me. This is a tough game on the road for the Bengals. Obviously, Burrow with his calf, he's not 100%. But last week, the Bengals showed what can happen when you get the ball to your best player, and that is Ja'Marr Chase, who had an absolute field day last week against the Rams. So I think the Bengals cover here. I think it's obviously Vegas thinks it's close. I think the Bengals take this one by 3, maybe 4 points in a close battle here in Tennessee. I got the Rams. You might as well take the plus point. I mean, it's in Indianapolis. With Anthony Richardson coming back off a concussion, you know, those are always tricky, right? He's looked good, but with those concussions, it's one hit away and he might be back out again. Stafford's a veteran quarterback. It's on the road. But I think the Rams somehow pull this one out in a close game. And obviously, I got the Niners to win. That's pretty much everyone's pick, I'm sure. So that means it's probably going to be a close game. So I'm going to go with the money line because the point spread on it to me is just a little too high. Dobbs hasn't looked terrible as Arizona's quarterback. They pulled off a huge win last week at home versus Dallas. So maybe they get some – maybe they keep this a close game, but I can't see the Niners losing this one. At home. So those are my three picks of the week. I got Bengals -2.5, Rams +0.5, and 49ers to win. Quick update on the Hard Rock situation here in Florida. We are still waiting. It's been to the Supreme Court now, petition to them. So Ron DeSantis has been ordered to respond with his team. Wes Flagler has until November 21st to respond. So they're going to take all the time they can to respond. So once again, we're still delayed. We're still waiting. The Seminole Tribe spokesperson said that he has no plans of changing anything as of right now. So unfortunately, it's looking like it's going to be a longer wait. But I think eventually this all comes to an end. I think Wes Flagler's running out of options here to stall. So I think we got a couple more months to go until all this gets cleared up and we will be good to go.
All right. Well, from one form of gambling to another, we'll get into our worthless sports card breaks. Let's see what is in store for us this week. Well, I've got some baseball cards in honor of the baseball playoffs starting. Got a couple products we haven't done. Big League Baseball, which for some of you collectors, this is actually like a very inexpensive product. I think they designed this for kids, and like it's the cheapest product they put out other than maybe opening day. And I think it's a cool design. We'll see what this looks like, but even just looking at the logo and everything, this is for like, you know, young people, not like old timers. But on the flip side of that, here's Heritage, which is absolutely for like old people like myself who love the old 70s. Because what they'll do is they'll take a year from the past and do current players as well as Hall of Famers in the old style. So the packaging looks like old style and the retro feel. Let's get with the current day stuff, though.
Maybe get some raisin there for good luck, right?
Dude, we got to, brother. Because I'll show you. This is pretty cool. So, like, first off, just big letters, big logos, kind of cool little like lines on the side there. Jock Peterson, Sean Murphy, Brandon Crawford. Hey, it's my cousin Zach Wheeler. Here he is. Joey Gallo, Max Muncy, Stephen Kwan, Seiya Suzuki, Reed Detmers. There we go. Is a rookie of Josh Smith, Tyler Freeman, Matt Chapman. So here's a do you see these outfits? These are the Colorado Rockies. Boys, they look too. They look like they're the license plates out there.
Yeah.
They're so ugly, but they're beautiful. Here's a Derek Jeter card. Is this a? Oh, I think I don't know if it's just a Derek Jeter instead. 8-bit ballers. Look at this thing, dude. That's badass, man.
That's a retro look right there.
I don't even know. Look, got a little Mario Brothers looking thing on the back here. Cool. This is cool, brother.
It's a cool one.
It's kind of, and now we get our like shiny cards. Kids like shiny cards. I like shiny cards. Yachty, who's retired. Hall of Famer right there, buddy.
All day.
And then Alec Burleson, Whit Merrifield, Charlie Blackmon, who's got one of the most epic beards in baseball. That dude. Quietly, he's sort of like he's one of the longest tenured Rockies, actually.
Is he? So funny.
Polanco, Brendan Rodgers, Mike Trout. So yeah. Some kid is going crazy. Plus, check where like the you see how like the back goes over. Yeah. I love little things like that to make this look cool. Tony Gonsolin, Javier, Logan Webb. No Rays, dude.
None.
So oh, what is with this, dude? All right. I don't like that. But so cup, dude, this is like as a kid, one, that's like especially if like Jazz is like one of your favorite right. players, that is killer. Some rookie cards, some things like that. But
how many were in that pack? What was that
30? A lot of cards, actually. This yeah. one had 36 cards.
36.
And I can't remember what the retail value of that is, but like yeah, it's a lot of cards. It's a super value product. They do some rare cards in there, but I don't think collectors really like big league baseball.
Right.
Again, it's like something you can go to Target, grab it for your kids. So here's Heritage. If I remember, I'm trying to remember the year that they're doing these, but this is 1970s. These actually feel, they have the card stock like feel of the old card. And that's really what they're trying to do. They're super thick. Just really trying to recreate. So the whole set is this style, just with current players plus Hall of Famers thrown in there. So you're going to see a lot of different ones. Let's see who we get. Jonathan India. What? Let's see. Ryan Aguilar, Connor Wong. So look at this old style photo. Christian Yelich, Josh Donaldson, MJ Melendez, Dallas Garcia, Ryan Nelson, Adley Rutschman. Look at this with the old school tops. Love it, man.
Lots of Baltimore.
That's actually a good rookie card. I got to see how much that's worth, actually. Kyle Bradish. The World Series. Speaking of the Astros, they beat the Phillies. I know, right? Severino, Cody Bellinger, Randall Grichuk. Those
cheaters cards.
Alexis Dean, Franklin Germán. And last one. So in this pack, there's 20 cards in these hanger packs or fat packs.
This is getting me hype for baseball, man. Nothing like Troptober, right? Trop's going to be live, man. Rally towels will be there. It's going to be a good day.
They can do something. They can do some damage, especially even with all the injuries, man. The Rays have a shot. Here's our boy Mike Trout.
Trout again.
Hall of Famer. Right, Bryce Harper right after that. Mitch Keller. G.J. LeMahieu, Lane Thomas, young Carlos Stanton, Hunter Brown, home run leaders of Judge and Schwarber. I dig those.
Miguel Andujar. Pretty good year.
Taryn Vavra, Mackenzie Gore, Lamont Wade, Andrew McCutcheon, Jose Urquidy with the little press background. It's pretty funny. New Age performers, Jazz Chisholm, Max Kepler. Not a single Ray.
Nope.
But this Adley Rutschman rookie cards. Yeah. Actually, I think that's cool. A good pull there.
Yeah.
So you know what? Sometimes you don't get everything that you want, but that is our worthless sports card break for the week. Hey, let's flip this over. I'm Eureka. Boop. There you are. Sometimes you strike out, man. You strike out with these cards. So sure. There's some cool ones. Nothing too rare. Nothing too crazy. But what is crazy that we're going to get into is something we both love, and that is a little bit of pro wrestling talk. So, Chris,
that is true.
Lay it on me, brother. Who is your pro wrestler of the week? It's a big week for wrestling.
I got the Switchblade Jay White this week, man. He's really taken over a big role in AEW, I think. You know, Punk's gone now. Jay White's obviously wrestled all over the world. I think his rivalry coming up with MJF or whatever they're doing, whatever way they're going with this, I think is going to be – that's pretty solid, man. You're looking at two really good wrestlers going at it. He just beat Andrade last week, obviously with the help of Juice, but nonetheless, it was still a really good match. And then they had him getting jumped and backstage by the 4 or 5 guys dressed in black, and one of them had the MJF mask on, which we all know it's not MJF, but someone's playing games. I don't think it's MJF myself, but I think Jay White just a really good wrestler, man. Good. I think this storyline is going to be good for him.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of this is a pivot after the injury to Adam Cole. Again, like,
correct.
The pro wrestling person in me is like, is he as injured as they're saying? Like, how long is he really going to be out? Like, you know, are there's a little bit of kayfabe of the broken ankle. You know, he's saying I exploded it and show the X-rays, are, you know, from Britt putting the X-rays
out. Yeah, I saw that.
Plus, it's such an intriguing storyline. Just the whole MJF and Adam Cole thing is so intriguing. But then to have, you know, you have the separation of like Roderick Strong pulling Adam Cole away and then who's there to pounce right on that opportunity? The Switchblade, buddy. And Jay White, I think, is whether it's a curveball or part of the plan or not, this elevation that he's getting is very, very good. And that promo, that, like, I agree with you why you would pick him, because that promo that he did with MJF was, that was the question mark. So I'm a big New Japan pro wrestling guy, and like Jay White had all the tools. He looks like $1 million. He's an amazing wrestler. Him and Okada just had so many bangers over the years. And I mean, this guy, Jay White, headlined Wrestle Kingdom, which is the biggest New Japan. This was in January that he went from that to coming into AEW, and now proving the character work is there too. It isn't just the five-star classics he can have. And I think he's only had one real big breakout kind of performance in AEW wrestling wise, but it's there. And I'm telling you, like, there's going to be a main event Jay White match that's going to blow everyone's socks off coming up here really soon. So I like that. For me, myself, I switched it up because there's another performer that's I think killing it and acing it in his new role as he's getting a push. And that is, of course, Swerve Strickland. This is my pro wrestler of the week for a lot of the same reasons, man. He had a promo with the Hangman, Adam Page.
My boy.
And that's your boy. And man, I mean, look, Swerve's, he messed up a couple lines. Both those guys kind of messed up the lines. But what you couldn't deny was they had the passion was there. Like, to me, I believe that character believes what they're saying. And that's it's okay if it flubs up. They're not, you know, like, I'm okay with that. Just having those little bit of missteps, is the audience doesn't know their missteps, right? So they play it off really well. Swerve, another guy, phenomenal in-ring talent. And I don't think anyone who's been watching him since Lucha Underground, Major League Wrestling, you know, WWE, like, he's there. He's been an undervalued, underappreciated talent, and it's still, even him coming to AEW has been like kind of shaky, in my opinion. You know, the whole Keith Lee thing and the putting him in a tag team, and then they're like, split up the tag team, and then they just had this never-ending feud where both of those guys, I think, took a big hit. And now you get to dust Swerve off. His work with Nick Wayne, his work with, like, he had me believing AR Fox was going to be a solid piece in that Mogul Embassy. The Mogul, the him taking the embassy and making it, and all this with this trench, and what's the other tattooed white guy? They've been throwing flop after flop after flop at Swerve's direction, and he has just been literally swerving out of the way of these things and making it happened for me anyway. I'm a huge, huge Swerve Strickland guy.
Me too.
And I believe he's finally getting that little bit of spotlight. And tonight, he gets to really prove the mettle, because he's going to have a spotlight, not main event, but spotlight match.
Probably the first match, maybe.
It might be the first match. I mean, I don't know. But it's definitely going to be their opportunity, both Hangman and Swerve. Because Hangman's also a guy that's been pushed into the spotlight. I mean, he's the people's champion on AEW. I mean, it's so many people love Hangman. And so this is an opportunity to show me that Hangman can actually help elevate a heel. By, you know, it takes two to tango. So both these guys have what it takes, in my opinion. And I think it's going to be a great match. But that's one of many, many matches tonight on WrestleDream. So I guess, Chris, let's get into that. I guess from the we'll start from the top. What I think is the most important matches down. Yep. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think the main event is going to be Christian Cage versus Darby Allin on 2 out of 3 falls match for the TNT championship that Christian Cage has been holding on his shoulder for months or weeks or whatever, and now he finally has earned it by pinning Luchasaurus, his heater there. So Darby Allin, is this going to be a hometown coronation, or does Christian Cage somehow sneak out of there with the belt?
I think Darby takes this one. If they're putting it at the main event, you got to have a pop. I think Darby wins this match. That's why it's 2 out of 3 falls. Obviously, Christian's probably going to score the first fall, come really close to scoring the second one, and then Darby makes some amazing comeback. And then there's always the possibility, do we see Edge tonight? Is Edge coming back tonight?
Ooh.
Is it going to happen? It's the main event, right? Maybe you have Edge come out in a brood type of thing, which would be awesome. You know, old school brood Edge one more time or something like that.
Okay.
I think you would dig that. Yeah, man, I'm cool with that. Even if you have Edge just come out or some kind of a pop, but I think it's mixed emotions, right? Because if Darby wins, what's the point of Edge coming out, right? If Edge comes out, that means he's got to be heel, right? You know, is he joining Christian? Like, which way would you go with it, right? But because I think Darby wins this match, so if Edge does come back, I'd be curious to see how that goes.
Yeah, so that is the big question. Does Sexton Hardcastle, Flip Sunset, Adam Copeland, what's a synonym for Edge? Margin? I don't know. Anyway, another Adam to go with Adam Cole and Adam Page. Adam Copeland shows up. The way I see it, if you're going to do it, so his contract did end, yesterday, right? His WWE contract ended yesterday, so he's available to do what he wants. I think you can. So if Adam Copeland shows up, it's a huge pop, and he's a face immediately. But I think the way you do this is you can kind of have a couple things accomplished in this match. One, you can have Darby Allin win, which I believe Darby Allin will win as well. But you can also, because it's 2 out of 3 falls, so a lot of things can happen. I think that Luchasaurus can turn on Christian and turn Luchasaurus face, he's okay as a heel or whatever, but like we want to cheer Luchasaurus. Right. So you can have him turn face against Christian, who, you know, screwed him out of that belt. And you can still have Adam Copeland show up to help his friend, his brother, Christian Cage. So Copeland is a face. He's helping Christian, who's a heel. And there's a good dynamic that they can play because, in my opinion, if you bring Copeland in, you put him right with Christian. I think you make them a tag team. And then now you can set up Darby and Luchasaurus versus Edge and Christian, or whatever they, you know, end up calling Edge, Adam Copeland and Christian, and they reunite that tag team for a little bit. Cause I think inevitably it will just a little bit on Copeland. If you bring him to AEW, it's not for a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to be there for years and years. I think you have maybe one good year run, which is parallel to Bryan Danielson's 1 year of run, right? Right. So there's a matchup that could happen. And the final Edge on his podcast years ago, Ocean to be the one who ends Edge's career at WrestleMania, right? So I would assume I'm booking way far in advance, but I have Wembley Stadium on my mind. I have Christian versus Adam Copeland with 70, 80, how many people they're going to put in that Wembley Stadium as one of the featured things, the end of Edge's career versus Christian at Wembley Stadium. And I think you have a good year. You have 11 months to get that accomplished.
I like it.
But it starts with them together. So I think they can do that a lot of different ways. But the other dream, we talk about wrestle dream. Here's a dream match. Bryan Danielson, Zach Sabre Jr. Now, my question is, Chris, I don't know how familiar you were or are with Zach Sabre Jr.
A little bit.
Well, I was going to say, have they done enough? Has AEW done enough to prove that Zach Sabre Jr., this is really a dream match? Or because one thing I criticize AEW about is that they assume that everyone out there is like us, where we like live and breathe and watch every little thing from all around the world, right? So do you believe that they have built this match up to its lofty dream match title?
I don't think so. I think they kind of just threw his big name in there and people were like, oh my gosh, this is the match we want to see. Daniel Bryan versus, you know, Zack Sabre Jr., two technically gifted wrestlers are going to go at it for 30, 40 minutes, just slapping each other and throwing each other around and taking some hard bumps, I'm sure, on the outside, you know, and it's just going to be one of those matches that I don't think it was necessarily the build up. It's more so just a match that I think people want to see, you know, like they're going to tune in just to see it, not for the story itself, but just the match itself type thing. Yeah. I think Bryanson wins this one. I think it's a, like I said, back and forth battle. I don't see Bryanson losing, not here in AEW home turf, maybe if it was overseas. But I think Bryanson takes this one, but I do think it's going to be a really, really, really good match.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so, and who knows what the limitations of Bryan Danielson are still, but this is a match that they can actually wrestle. They're not, there's no power bombs or burning hammers or top rope, hurricanrana, you know, like there's none of that going to happen. This is going to be a grappling match. And so is that going to live up to what it could be? And they'll give it time. So it'll have time to build. It'll have time to start out slow and then build into something. And we'll see what that ends up being. To answer my own question though, I don't think so, man. I don't think they've really, Tony's really hoping that you know who Zack Sabre Jr. is and that they're just going to tell you that this is a dream match and they're going to tell you that this is a big deal. And whether you get it or not, like if you get it, that you're the intended, like someone like me is the intended audience. And I think they handicap themselves to the marginal, that kind of audience. When you don't prove over, I mean, they had 4 weeks to really nail it home. Like that Zack Sabre Jr., here's what he's done. Here's what he's done domestically. Here's what he's done in domestically in England for himself, over in Japan. Now he's coming to the States. This is a big deal. And here's why. I don't think they've done enough of that. I think they just were like, hey, this is great. It's going to be great. You should watch it. This is going to be great. And it's like, sure. But now they have to prove it. Well, my boy, next up, I think the next important match is your boy Hangman Adam Page against my boy Swerve Strickland in a pretty good grudge match. I don't know how much time they're going to get, but I said a lot's riding on Swerve Strickland and Hangman Adam Page for this match. How do you see it going?
Who do you got in Bryanson match?
Dragon. Sorry, I agree with you. I think Dragon beats Zack Sabre Jr. Again, they haven't built up Zack Sabre Jr. as like there's no future in AEW for him or whatever. Like if he beats Bryan Danielson, what does that accomplish for him? Right. This is just again why I think they should have built him up as like, guys, this is Zack Sabre Jr. He's a champion here and he's broken all these dudes' bones. But whatever you want to do, that you say that's why Bryan Danielson wants to fight him and wants to prove he's the best, and then he does. He will. Dragon wins. So sorry about that.
I got Swerve in this one. I think Swerve takes it. It's in his house.
Whose house?
Swerve's house. I don't think Hangman needs this one. They just won the Ring of Honor Trios belts. He's going to be fighting with the Bucks. I think Hangman had his singles run. He's kind of been bouncing around a little bit. He had that injury, so he's kind of – they're kind of finding a way for him to go right now, and he's with the Elite. And I don't know if Swerve wins this clean. He's still technically a heel, right? Mm-hmm. But it's in his house, so you got to think the crowd's going to be behind him. Maybe some kind of foolery at the end when he somehow pulls it out. But I do think Swerve takes this one. But if I wouldn't be wrong here, or I should say, I think this is match of the night. I think this tops all the matches on the card. These are two absolute great superstars in the ring. You're going to see a lot of moonsaults and flying and just two big guys that can fly, which is fun to see sometimes. So I think you're going to get a good, you're going to get a 30 minute banger right here of two dudes. Just, you can feel the intensity right in the promos. Right. So, but I do think Swerve takes this one.
So Tony Khan's talked about, and we should preface this. He's been saying this is the start of the new era. he's been saying the new era of AEW. Okay. And I that could be because they're relating to a new streaming deal with HBO, with Max, right? I think there's a big news that's going to come out, but we've talked about maybe Adam Copeland shows up in this new era. Mm-hmm. I believe that Swerve Strickland is a big project in the new era of All Elite Wrestling. And so I actually think it's going to be clean. I think it's going to be a just two dudes going at it. Swerve, I have Swerve winning as well, because I believe Hangman Page is on a, like, he's on another downward spiral trajectory,
right?
To kind of go back into that, like, cowboy shit, beer drinking kind of guy. I think he's on a, and here's Swerve, who came up, called the shot, looked him right in the eye. This whole time he's been telling the Mogul Embassy, stay back, because I think they're positioning Swerve as one of these, like, cool heels. You know, he's gonna have all the swagger. He's unapologetically who he is, and now he gets to prove that he's that dude in the ring as well. And I mean, maybe he cheats at the end, but I would have this clean. The crowd's gonna be behind it. I agree. It could be match of the night. I have very high expectations for that match.
Me too.
It isn't the main event, and there's not. I don't think there's gonna be a lot of bells and whistles and stuff, because I think they're gonna do all that stuff in the Christian match. Another match that has no bells and whistles and should just be a barn burner in the ring, and that is the rematch of the AEW Tag Team Champion FTR versus Aussie Open. Who do you have winning this match? And this could be match of the night.
I think FTR still retains here. I think they keep the belts on them. FTR's probably the best tag team right now, in my opinion, honestly. AEW's done a better job with elevating their tag teams. I think bringing Aussie Open in was a really good idea. Aussie Open, I personally love them ever since I've seen them. You know, they were my wrestlers of the week about a month ago. I think they're a fantastic team, but I just don't see FTR losing the belts just yet. If you keep the belts on them a little longer, there's no reason for them to drop them, really. I haven't seen another team elevated enough to beat FTR, I should say. I think you got to get some kind of a build in there where maybe a team like the Guns, you know, beats FTR again for the belts, or one of the younger teams, because the Acclaimed are off with the Trios belts right now. And, you know, obviously FTR is face, so you'd have to have a heel team obviously beat FTR. And I don't think it's going to be Aussie Open, but definitely going to be a great match again. This card's pretty nice, but I do got FTR taking this one.
So this is the first time we're disagreeing. I think Aussie Open's going to take this because for another reason later on in the show. FTR's already proven they're one of the best tag team. They're the best tag team, if not one of, right? And I think that now you don't like them having the belt. They beat Aussie Open, and then what? Like, well, I mean, there's an answer to that little. You can answer that question later on, but. Because there's not a lot of true contenders for that belt with the FTR as the champion. If you put Aussie Open as the champion, now you can some new fresh matchups that you haven't seen before. There's a little bit of more doubt that can be put onto that title. Like, how long is Aussie Open going to keep the title kind of thing versus who's going to dethrone FTR. Right now, they have one team that's built up to do that, and that's Aussie Open. And I think it's, I think FTR beat them the first time, right? So I think this would be, is this our second or third match?
Yeah, second.
So if it's the second match now, we got a rubber match on our hands in the future. You know, both teams have a win. You took a belt off us. We took a belt off you, if I remember right. Now that one happened outside of AEW, but now in this one, Aussie Open can say, FTR, you say you're the greatest, but you never beat us in AEW, you know, that kind of thing. Like, now you've got a rematch. That's possible. That's a main event, and you've got more opportunity for lower card guys to get a little bit of a crack. There's a little bit more that you can do, and FTR is already there, and they don't get hurt by losing. Like, them losing the belts doesn't make them any less of a threat ever. So I think Aussie Open gives a little bit more story opportunity there. So
I like it.
Another story opportunity, another tag team championship is Maxwell Jacob Friedman in a handicap match against the Righteous, who have had all of the vignettes and all of the TV time and all of the promo time in the world to build them up. Do you think the Righteous win the ROH Tag Team Championships versus MJF? And will it continue to be a handicap match, or will someone come out to help MJF?
God, man, I'm leaning towards MJF on this one. The only way I can see Righteous winning is if Cole's injury is legit and he's going to be out for a long, long extended period of time, maybe. Yeah. But I think MJF somehow wins this one. Like you said, does somebody come out and tag with him? Is it a random person that we don't think would happen? And it does happen, you know? So
I
got to roll with MJF on this one. My gut says that. But if the Righteous win, it's got to be because Cole is out for an extended period of time and they want to get the belts off them. Because I feel like if the Righteous win, that wasn't the path they were going to go. They're pivoting here with the injury to Cole. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, but I do think MJF somehow wins this, whether it's by himself, because he is, you know, obviously the champion and he's strongest guy on the roster, you know? So he's built to take on two guys being the champ. You know, he could do it and pull it off when his kangaroo kicks and is doing his messing around, joking stuff he does. So
yeah,
I think this is a good match. I think we could see something interesting happen here if someone does come out, but I do got MJF taking this one.
So I'm weird about this because there's two storylines going on right now inside of this. That's the MJF and Adam Cole, and also the Adam Cole and Roderick Strong. And I think that there's a way. So I think MJF wins this match somehow. They retain, because I don't think they're putting the belts on the Righteous. I think as much as they've been pushing them, even winning the ROH belts, no one cares. Or at least I care very, very little about that. The Righteous, unfortunately, I don't know if it's just the gimmick or something. They're just not. I don't think they found their footing inside that. They've been really good vignettes, though. I think they've been really, really good. I think there's a way, though, that MJF can cheat. Right? He's our scumbag. MJF can cheat, and then somehow they strip the titles off of them. Like MJF lost, he wins the match, but he loses the titles. And that's a way that you don't have to put the belts on the Righteous. You can have an ROH four-way for the belt or whatever, you know, at one of the things. But if they don't want to take the belts off of MJF and them, then I think you do have someone like, well, here's my craziest story. Is that MJF is you know, he's doing it to him in the beginning. He's doing it because he's MJF by himself should beat the Righteous, right?
Right.
But somehow then it just becomes too much to handle. MJF is now just getting pummeled, and then who else but Roderick Strong comes out, throws the neck brace off, reaches for the hot tag, gets the hot tag, and now you have Roderick Strong defending the belts with MJF, and it's now a triangle going on where it's like, dude, I like that face that MJF will make when he's like, I don't want to tag you in, dude, but I'm also like getting my
dead butt kicked.
Okay, fine. And then like now we get a little bit of a weird thing going on there. Right. So that's another possibility, but who knows? Or Jay White could also just come out, pummel MJF. And the Righteous take the belts, and even though they didn't earn them, they win them, and then that could be a storyline. So, but I think this is the middle of the card kind of thing. It pushes the storyline of MJF a little bit. That's more intriguing than this match is.
Right.
The stuff around it, unfortunately. Right. But we both you don't have the Righteous winning?
Okay. No.
MJF. Okay, good. Me neither. I think that MJF retains the belts, and then there's a storyline. Something happens one way or another. Well, here you go. No storyline needed here. This is just going to be pure Japanese style chop fest here. That is New Japan Strong and Ring of Honor World Champion Eddie Kingston. Can't believe I'm saying those words. Versus the legend, the wrestler. He's literally called the wrestler. He's the legend. Katsuyori Shibata. I believe they've done a way better job pushing Shibata as like, okay, hey, people, you don't know who Katsuyori Shibata is. Let us tell you the story. They've done a little better that he is the Ring of Honor Pure Champion. So if he wins, the Pure Championship is not on the line, but the Ring of Honor World Championship is on the line, as well as the New Japan Strong Championship. So with that said, how do you see this match going? Who do you have winning?
I think Kingston wins this one straight up. Okay. I think they're, like you said, it'll be a slapping, beating the crap out of each other, taking some serious chops. I'm not an Eddie guy. I never have been. I don't get it, but hey, he's the people's champ, man. People love Eddie Kingston. They cheer for him, and it's awesome. It's just not my cup of tea, his style. I think he's great on the mic, in ring. I think he takes some good bumps. He does a couple decent moves here and there, and then he wins his match with a backhand slap to the face. You know, that's it. That's Kingston, right? It's cool, but I think Kingston takes this one.
So I don't know, because I had my thoughts one way, and then Moxley got hurt. Because I thought that Eddie Kingston, it's weird that he won the world championship in Ring of Honor. So they're kind of telling a story that I didn't see coming.
Right.
And in a weird way, I still think like that Kingston is better chasing the belt. It's like as you said, the people's champion. Well, dude, his promos are just the best.
Yeah,
like,
they are.
Eddie Kingston, you believe what he says. I believe that character believes what they're saying. But him having two belts is just weird. And like, I think that as much as he just won that world championship, I think that he loses it too. I think Shibata becomes what they will call a triple crown champion. I think Shibata is going to be the Ring of Honor world champion and the New Japan Strong champion, and the pure champion. And he becomes the triple crown Shibata. Kingston could win this because it is a little close to him winning those things, but I think his storylines with Claudio, his storyline with Moxley, his storyline with all of that kind of stuff doesn't need a belt. And I think is actually like the belt should be somewhere else while you're doing that, because now it's like, oh, is Claudio going to be the New Japan Strong champion? I thought he was going to challenge Moxley for that international championship until he got hurt. There's a lot of different ways they could have gone. I think it's going to be a really fun, old-school King's Road-style Japanese match, but I have Katsuyori Shibata winning.
Okay.
But so, New Era, here's another one. There's a potential for some New Era stuff to happen in the AEW TBS Championship match, Chris Statlander versus Julia Hart. Julia Hart is on I don't think she's been beaten this year at all.
28.
Dude, she is getting pushed to the moon here, and I think she's doing a phenomenal job with her new character, her character work, the work that she's been. Because, dude, like, Malakai Black's not been around. Buddy Matthews not been around. So it's been her and Brody King. Brody King's hurt, right? He's punching walls and stuff. So Julia Hart has not only been pushing herself, she's been carrying the torch, literally, for their entire faction. So is she an unstoppable, the immovable object is Chris Statlander, the TBS champion, versus the unstoppable object in Julia Hart. How do you see this one coming out?
I think Julia takes it, man. I think they put the strap on her, right? She won last night on Rampage, you know, squash match, but it was just 28 straight wins. You know, this is a big time for her to shine. I think, like you said, she's getting pushed pretty good right now. I don't see why you would kill the momentum, put the belt back on a heel. I think Statlander was the right one to come back and beat Jade, but Jade's gone now. She's beaten Jade twice before, you know, one time right quickly before Jade left.
Yeah.
I think Statlander's run has been okay. I don't think the TBS belt has necessarily been booked the greatest, in my opinion. I think Statlander's kind of just holding it right now. Okay. I think if you put it on Julia Hart, there's more of a story there. She's a heel, obviously, right? But I see the crowd kind of getting behind her watching some of these matches. So why not switch it up tonight and keep the win streak going for her?
Yeah, it's like I think that Statlander winning that belt from Jade, I think it's still too early to take it off her. I mean, they do need to tell a little bit more of a story with Chris Statlander and like what it means to her. And I think there's a different way of character work to do that. And I think that she could beat Julia Hart and it still not really hurt Julia Hart's rocket. I would like to see them win the TBS championship and then turn it into like all black and white like yeah. take that collar out of that belt. Yeah, like that'd be cool. That would be it would be cool to have Julie Hart as a champion. Look, this is really a toss up for me. My feeling is Chris Statlander retains. There's still story that they can tell with both of them. But it's a coin flip because here's the other thing: you might have a debut of Mercedes Moné. That's another person that could be in this new era of AEW. And the question is, do you bring Mercedes Moné in and immediately feud her with Chris Statlander? Or do you have her face Julia Hart? And I think there's a way that they can have this match. Julia Hart shows that she's like on a new level. Chris Statlander escapes with the title. And then Mercedes Moné comes down, doesn't want to face Chris Statlander, though. She wants to face Julia Hart. And do you put the TBS title in the picture with Mercedes Moné eventually, or do you have Mercedes Moné kind of work her way up the card? Because what you really want her to be is in the world championship picture, right? Right. But the way you do that, in my mind, is you bring her in, and you have her versus Julia Hart, and she beats Julia, who's now been established as a not a champion, but better than most as your first stepping stool to get up to the Tony Storms and those kind of players right there. But again, it could go either way. There's a lot of different storylines. Just even if Mercedes Moné doesn't show up, I think that there's more intrigue. And for the women's division, they need as much storyline and intriguing things to happen as they can get.
Right.
Here's another crazy one. The Callis family of Will Ospreay, Konosuke Takeshita, and Sammy Guevara versus this is the Winnipeggers of Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, and the Golden Lover, Kota Ibushi, in a fun six-man, good guy versus bad guy. I don't know how much time this will get, but there's a lot of star power in this match. And other than Chris Jericho, I think everyone's been doing a pretty good job doing promos. Chris Jericho just has been coming off as this weird, like,
yeah,
baby face. And I don't like it. You know, we're going to punch in the face. You know, I just don't dig it. But everyone else, man, Omega, Ibushi, Ospreay, Takeshita, the brand new Scarface inspired Sammy Guevara. There's a lot going on here. How do you see this match going?
I think Kenny and Jericho take this one. I think this is more just a fun match to get your some of your star guys out there. Because you got to think, Takeshita's what, beating Kenny twice, you know, now. I feel like this has got to be the time where Kenny and Jericho win this match. I think there's a lot of star power, like you said. So I'm not too sure what to expect in this one. It's, you know, is it going to be them just running around with no tags, all beating the crap out of each other? Or is it going to be like good six-man tag match where, you know, the crowd's cheering to get Kenny Omega in there at the end to run through everybody and do the one-winged angel on Sammy Guevara? Because I feel like there's no way Ospreay or Takeshita take the pin here. I think that's why Sammy's in the match to probably take the pin here, I would think. Yeah. So maybe Jericho pins Sammy, or Jericho makes Sammy tap out, or you have, you know, something along those lines. But I think the Jericho and Kenny Omega squad take this one here.
I think completely opposite. I think that the good guys have everything they can lose. I think the bad guys win. They cheat, of course, but the run that they're doing with the Alpha, Konosuke Takeshita and Don Callis and all this stuff, and bringing in Ospreay, and it's like, and they're pushing Sammy Guevara, having them lose right now, I don't think services the story, but I think it's gonna be a good match. Kota Ibushi has been a guy who has come back from injury. I don't think he'll ever be the Kota Ibushi that he was a few years ago, and to be honest with you, man, I think it might be good for his health that he kind of tones it down, because Ibushi's a dude that does not care about his neck or his back. He will go full throttle. And he was not very good shape at Wembley. He showed up way better. Wembley, he was okay. It was the blood and guts match that he came out and just did not look the same, did not work the same. It's kind of a disappointment. This match, though, I think he'll have a better showing. Him, Takeshita, Ospreay, could definitely do a lot of cool things in the ring together. Very good performers. And after all that, I think you're going to see cool Omega stuff, cool Jericho stuff, cool Ibushi stuff, until Sammy Guevara stabs somebody with a screwdriver or something. And then, then that's how they win. Yeah, so I have the Callis family winning, but they cheat to win, but they do win. And then you still, I don't know how Jericho fits. I mean, Jericho fits with the whole Callis kind of thing, but I think he's the weakest part. I think they can just remove Chris Jericho, even though he is connected to Don Callis. He's connected to Sammy Guevara. It's time to end those. Just go do something else with this. Right. Yeah, I think it's dragging it down. So, the rest of the matches, I think, well, I guess there's one more that has a lot of potential to mean something down the road. There was a thread I was talking about with the AEW Tag Team Championship, FTR, and Aussie Open. Well, there's going to be a four-way. The winner becomes the number one contender for that championship. That is going to be Lucha Brothers versus the Guns versus the Bucks versus Hook and Orange Cassidy. So there's a couple ways I could see it going. How do you see this match going?
This is a tough one, man. I think this is the toughest one on the card as far as picking goes.
Okay.
Because
that's fun. I like that.
If you got to think, if FTR wins, right, they retain obviously their face, right? So
yes.
I don't see them. I don't know. AEW puts face versus face sometimes, and just to have a good match as well. So
yep.
If Aussie Open wins, okay, then they're heel champs, and then you have, you know, the Bucks who are face, and you got Hook and OC that are face. But man, this is a tough one. I really want to see the Guns get elevated back to that. I like the Guns myself.
Okay.
I'd like to see them get a push. I think they're good in the ring. I think they're great on the mic. Honestly, I think they followed their dad's footsteps great. I think they're funny. I love their intro music. They got one of the best intros in the game. I think so. But it's really hard for me to see the Young Bucks losing this one at the pay-per-view. So
okay.
I think I got to ride with the Bucks here. I think they're kind of pushing themselves to get back in that tag title picture. But I guess if they do, then they're fighting FTR. Maybe. I don't know, man. This is a tough one. There's a lot of ways this one could go. But it is. I guess I'm going to roll with the Bucks, honestly. I've been debating on this one, you know, since they announced this match, but I guess I'll roll with the Bucks. But I think it's going to be one of those matches, like I said, no tags. People are going to be flying everywhere. Crazy moves are going to be going on. OC's hands in the pockets. Hook's doing, you know, weird, quiet things like he does. And then it's just going to be one of those fun tag matches.
Yeah. I go who I don't have. Lucha Brothers could win this because either way, Aussie Open or FTR would be a good matchup. But I don't think that's how they roll because one of the Lucha Brothers has the international championship.
Right.
The Guns, I think, are the ones who take the pin here to set up future matches. And I don't think the Young Bucks win because they're the AEW, they're the Ring of Honor six-man tag team champions. So they're like doing weird things with all those belts. And that leaves one team, and that is Hook and Orange Cassidy. And that's who I think wins this match. I think they've been slowly building Hook and Orange Cassidy as a face tag team with the stupid little like chips and their boys. They've been boys. It makes sense. And they're a brand new team. The Hook has FTW championship. It doesn't matter. He can just keep that in his backpack, and no one cares about the FTW championship. It could just fly away. No one would ever ask for it ever again. Okay. That was a thing. Hook and Orange Cassidy, they're both main event. They want to push these young guys as the main event. I think it's going to blow up. The crowd is going to pop if Orange Cassidy and Hook win this contenders thing. I don't know if this is on the 0 hour, if this is on the paper.
No, it's on the card. Yeah.
It's on the card. It's going to be a fun match. And I think that, Hook and Orange Cassidy, I think they both hit their finishers on the Guns in the middle of the ring, and it sets up a little rivalry with the Guns and Orange Cassidy and Hook that's going to be believable. And I think that Hook and Orange Cassidy go on to face Aussie Open in a month or two or whatever for those championships. And even if they don't win the championships against Aussie Open, again, now you've made a new tag team, you've made a new thing, you've elevated your young stars, and you've given Aussie Open a team that they credibly can beat. And keep their title reign going. But or Hook and Orange Cassidy could be on a way to get the championship, and you didn't have to go through FTR to do it, right? So
right.
A lot of weird things, but yeah, Hook and OC is who I guess. My little kid agrees with me. He's a big Orange Cassidy guy. Well, so the rest of these, we can go quicker through these. Wheeler Yuta versus Ricky Starks. I don't know. I don't really know Starks. If I care who wins this match. Yeah. I have Starks winning as well.
Yeah.
Before I just blow right through that, is there anything to talk about? I mean, agreed. I think they're doing very bad here. And I don't know if Ricky Starks is like on the way out of the company, on his way to WWE or something, but I don't know how they – I'm not a big Ricky Starks believer, unfortunately. And Wheeler Yuta is still on his way up and out. They've given it a couple little promo things in the back. They haven't really pushed this at all.
Nah.
The Trios Champions, the House of Ass, the Acclaimed, and Billy Gunn versus TMDK, Shane Haste, Mikey Nichols, Bagdu Tito. It's a good way to get some New Japan guys on there. Shane Haste, I think, is an underrated talent. Mikey Nichols, Bagdu Tito, unknown guys to most people if you don't watch New Japan Strong. I think they get squashed. I mean, they might do some cool stuff on the 0 hour, but there's less than a 0% chance that they win the AEW Trios Championship against the
Acclaimed. Story.
I guess we'll save that for the last one. Claudio Castagnoli versus Josh Barnett. I think this is a cool way to introduce Josh Barnett. He'll lose, of course, to Claudio Castagnoli, in my opinion. But it'll be a good way to show off Josh Barnett as like a Ring of Honor guy. And if he's here for AEW or Ring of Honor, I think he could do some really good stuff in the pure division against Shibata. I'm excited for Josh Barnett and Claudio Castagnoli. I think it's going to be a cool pre-show match that Claudio wins.
Great.
And then there's a weird but cool little mixed tag eight-man match. Athena and Billy Starks, right? They're a weird little women. They're not weird, but they're this unique tag team in Ring of Honor. And then Keith Lee and Satoshi Kojima, who is, dude, if you don't know who Kojima is, he's an underrated legend of the past. I mean, he's won all the championships in Japan, right? I mean, he's like a Triple Crown winner and all this kind of stuff, but he's not really held here in America. I don't think people know Satoshi Kojima, but he showed up on a couple AEW shows. He shows out. The dude is 50 something years old and he can still go. It's really weird. They're fighting Lee Moriarty, Shane Taylor, and Mercedes Martinez and Diamante. I think that it's weird to call Athena and Billy Starks, because Athena is this weird, like, she's this dominating heel character with Billy Starks as like a face, young up and coming talent that's under her wing kind of thing. Her minion is what she calls Billy Starks. Athena calls her. So it's kind of like the good guys versus the absolute bad guys in Moriarty, Martinez, Diamante, Taylor. I think good guys win. And it's just gonna be fun.
Break.
I agree. You're just kind of throwing people on the card at this point. So I guess the last match we'll talk about as we go along here is Luchasaurus, who is like on Team Christian, versus Nick Wayne, who is the protege of Darby Allin, kind of a precursor to the main event of the thing here in the pre-show. Little bit of way to get some storyline of the main event here in the pre-show. Is there anything cool storyline-wise that you think could happen, Luchasaurus versus Nick Wayne?
I don't think so. I think Luchasaurus wins this one. I'm not a fan of Nick Wayne. Not yet, anyway. I just don't get it, I guess. Whoops. Not feeling it at all. I can't see him competing at all versus Luchasaurus. Do some flying moves here and there, maybe. But unless Luchasaurus is really selling here, I mean, Nick Wayne's a little bigger than me. Like, I don't know, man. I don't get it. I don't get the Nick Wayne thing. But I think Luchasaurus wins this match. Maybe something. Yeah, maybe some kind of tie into the Christian running out and beating up Nick Wayne, or some kind of a heel promo where Christian comes out and says, "Oh, your sports teams suck here in Seattle and the Kraken are trash," or something like that, you know, and maybe that's it, you know. But I think Luchasaurus wins this match.
Yeah, I think there's still a good little storyline thread of Nick Wayne becoming a disciple of Christian.
That's possible too.
And especially if Adam Copeland's around, that's a cool little trio there. Luchasaurus is the odd man out, though. I think that this is why I think he turns on Christian tonight. So Nick Wayne's going to get the hometown pop. And I kind of think Nick Wayne wins this match. He pulls it out. I think he beats Luchasaurus. And Christian is like mad at Luchasaurus. Like he's kind of like, for the first time, he's just like, you lost to Nick Wayne or whatever, you know. I think there's some storyline to do. I think Nick Wayne can pull out this weird upset. It's the pre-show.
I could buy that if that's what happens.
I think it doesn't matter who wins this match, but right. If Nick Wayne wins it, surprisingly, like he doesn't like hit a finisher and then like 1 foot on Luchasaurus's chest as he's posing, though. But I think Nick Wayne roll up weird, something weird, a thing that happens that Luchasaurus loses this match and it starts to sow the seeds of doubt in the Christian Cage Luchasaurus dynamic, but also like shows that Nick Wayne's got a little bit of you know, he can't lose all the time. He's got to win somebody, and he can beat Luchasaurus and won't hurt anybody. So, well, buddy, hell of a card for AEW Wrestle Dream, a huge, huge football game that we are about to see in about 30 minutes. For all of you watching live here, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. We give you all this content every single week, almost daily. We give you new RBLR content about all the teams that you love. Chris, final thoughts, buddy. What a huge weekend already with a big divisional matchup and a huge wrestling event that's going on today. What are you most excited for? And final words as we wrap up.
Man, let's go Bucks, baby. This is a big game. Obviously, I said I got us losing in a close one, but the Bucks can still pull it out. Anything's possible, right? Division game. First place is on the line as the Falcons have lost here to the Jaguars in London. So this is a big game now. We're going into the bye week. We got Detroit after that. Droptober starts Tuesday. This is the best time of year, man. Go Rays, baby. Go Bucks. Team Tampa Bay all the way.
Well, for Chris Glazer, I'm Eureka Wheeler. We are RBLR Sports. We'll check you later, boys. See ya!
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.
Oh, yeah.